Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
Listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Back here on Fantasy Sports Today, right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Hour number three, Kevin Walsh alongside George Kurtz. And George, you know, we're going to bring up obviously any big news that does come, and it looks like there could be some very bad news for the Carolina Panthers, as their starting right tackle, Darrell Williams, was carted off the field with a right knee injury. They said that it looked like it could have been severe. We already saw Jason Verrett, corner of the Chargers, ruled out for the year. Potentially, you know, you don't want to speculate too much, but maybe the same fate would be headed for Darrell Williams, and he's one of the best players in this offensive line. Last year, Pro Football Focus ranked him as the third best right tackle in all of football, and I don't know how much they could afford to lose with Andrew Norwell leaving for Jacksonville. We are going to do our NFC South preview tomorrow, but George, I mean, that has got to be some bad, bad news for the Carolina Panthers.
I don't want to say it's devastating. It is July 28th, but man, it's probably a top five player on that team they didn't want to lose. You know, you mentioned you already lost your best offensive lineman in free agency. All right, and now you lose your right tackle. You're playing Dallas week one. It's DeMarcus Lawrence you're going up against there. That could be ugly real quick. So, you know, to paraphrase Joe Girardi, it's not what you want. You know, it's concerning. But they have, you know, a little training camp to figure it out, to get somebody else up to par. I mean, if I'm looking on the bright side, sounds silly, but from a positive viewpoint, well, it'd be much worse if it happened August 28th, you know, rather than July 28th, where you're a week before, you know, week one, you have now you get somebody who's not even used to it in there. It's a blow. Offensive line, you never want to lose a player. And it's one thing we all worry about, whether I'm a Cowboy fan. You know, practice, oh, yeah, but you always worry about the injuries. And, you know, my fantasy teams, the teams we've drafted early, you know, we see it every year. Remember a couple of years ago with Jordy Nelson and Kelvin Benjamin within a week of each other, both lost for the season. It's what we all worry about. You know, football's a brutal sport. It's a brutal sport. You're going to have injuries. You're going to have guys lost for the season. We saw it with Hunter Henry months ago. You mentioned Jarrett yesterday. These, unfortunately, these won't be the last. This will almost be a daily occurrence.
Yeah, and that is one of the reasons why you know, I kind of put this in a way where this isn't not necessarily, you know, our final exact predictions, because things are going to change drastically before we get to week two of the preseason. You've already now seen, again, potentially, you could see a pair of starters on playoff contenders in Carolina and Chargers. I think that's fair to say, potentially be out for the year. That stuff matters, and that's impactful. So that's why, you know, you pose this, at least for me, in just terms of, you know, you want to ask the important questions and things to look for as you get ready for your drafts and get ready for the football season, as you get ready to make your projections, keeping in line with some of the news and notes that have come out of training camp. And it was a name that you mentioned while we were talking about the Dallas Cowboys, and that's Earl Thomas. Earl Thomas' situation is fascinating to me. It looks like he and Seattle could not be further apart on what they are wanting from each side. Seattle wants him to show up, and they said that they are not going to renegotiate the contract. And Earl Thomas has already said that he is willing to sit out into the season. We saw Cam Chancellor do this before. Cam Chancellor, who I believe Ian Rappaport said because he went on the PUP list, his career is over, which is certainly sad news. The Legion of Boom is completely gone. And Seattle, I mean, look, Seattle, honestly, if they didn't have Russell Wilson, I might have them as the worst team in all of football. They do have Russell Wilson, so it leaves some hope. But this Earl Thomas situation is not good. And I don't think that it is going to get solved in any way for this football team in Seattle. I just don't see it. They're too far apart. Neither side looks like they are ready to budge. So the question becomes then, George, to you, do you think that Dallas needs to go make that move and get Earl Thomas? Because if they did add him, I think then you go from a defense that is likely underrated to now really enters definitely the top half of the league discussion, maybe even flirts with top 10.
Well, I think if you're the Cowboys, I think you have to, yes. I think Seattle has to move on here. Obviously, they have no this is Seattle. Seattle has no intention of signing Thomas to a long-term extension, right? No intention of it whatsoever. He's 29 years old. He'll be 30 for the start of next season. They've moved on, which is fine. Then why aren't you trading him? You know, why aren't you doing it? Are you trying to build up value? Are you hoping during trading it that a team loses a safety and maybe you can get more from them? You know, I don't know what Dallas is offering. Now, Dallas, Jerry Jones generally is a wheeler and dealer, right? But you go back to the draft again. You know, I thought Dallas was very curious during their draft. They did need a safety, right? I think everybody in football knows they needed a safety. Well, you know, I think they had the 18th pick, and at 16, there was safety there. You know, and Dallas had a lot of extra draft picks in this draft from compensation picks and some trades they made. I think they had 3 or 4 extra picks. So they had ammunition pretty much to do whatever they wanted to do. Derwin James is sitting there. You know, and he would everybody assumed Dallas would definitely select him at 18, but when he's still there at 16, I think I was waiting for the trade. Dallas trade some draft picks, get him. You know, then the second round, you play the same game in the second round. You know, Jason Witten just retired. Right? So you need a tight end. Should be looking for one. Dallas Goedert is there. Now, you know he's probably not going to go to your – because he slipped a little bit in the draft. He's probably not going to fall to you at your slot, but you have those extra picks. Why aren't you spending that ammunition to move up? I bring this up because I wonder all of a sudden, is Jerry Jones getting a little sticky with his picks where he doesn't want a deal now? You know, like I said, Earl Thomas makes a lot of sense. Now, once again, Seahawks could be asking for a first and a third. That's not going to happen. You know, I think Earl Thomas' value is probably somewhere in that third, fourth round range. And that's what Seattle's going after. I mean, what do you want to do if you're Seattle? With or without Earl Thomas, you're a bad team. Right? You're not making the playoffs this season. You're not. All right? So, and you're not going to sign him next year. And you're not going to franchise him or anything like that. So, do you want to lose him for free? It doesn't make any sense to me. He doesn't want to be there. You obviously don't want to pay him. So, it seems like parting of the ways makes sense here. Work out a deal. Yeah, work out a deal with somebody. So my only thing here, Kevin, that I could possibly think of is that they're hoping that, once again, an injury happens in August to a contending team. You know, pick any team you want. They lose a safety, and they can get a second-round pick, which I don't think will ever happen. You know, but I guess that's what they're hoping for here. I think a fair deal for both sides probably is a fourth-round pick, and it, under certain conditions, you know, if he plays all 16 games or whatever, it goes to a third-round pick. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever condition you want to put in there, Dallas, a playoff team, whatever. You know, I think that actually makes sense for both teams. You already said why the Cowboys should do it. I just said it why Seattle should do it. Once again, this would be different if Seattle wanted to sign him long-term. You know, they had intention to do so, but we know they don't. So why would you want to give up a player for nothing? This would be different if Seattle was a playoff team this year. I mean, come on. I don't know if anybody's a playoff team in the NFC East out of Green Bay, Philadelphia, Minnesota, Atlanta, New Orleans, and the Rams. I mean, find one of those. And the NFC is loaded with good teams, but who's going to beat out those? Seattle's not. So I think a deal here makes all the sense in the world, but I wonder if Dallas being sticky with their picks, and I wonder if Seattle wants more. Then they have to know they're going to get for a 29-year-old safety.
I think Dallas, in terms of this situation, can be wise to be patient. But you have to, you know, Earl Thomas is going to come in and right away be one of the captains of this football team. Right away. He commands that type of respect. It'll be him and Sean Lee captaining this defense. To bring in that type of presence, you do want to have that sooner than later. Now, I do think that, you know, since they've waited longer and longer, and Seattle has lost leverage. So that can certainly work out in their favor. But this is a move that they absolutely should make. And I agree with you. Look, Seattle's got to make it, because he's not coming back unless you give him the money. And here's why I feel very confident in that. He was going to retire when he got hurt. I don't think Earl Thomas is scared of sitting out. I think that when that happened, he said, maybe this is not worth it. And then that's part of the reason he's pushing for the contract. If you want me to continue to play this game, you will pay me accordingly. And I'm telling you, I don't think there's a scenario in which he ends up shooting up for any football team unless that contract situation is worked out. And Dallas can be fine to pay him. I think that he'd make a really, really big impact for this team. I think that I would put them comfortably within the two best teams in this division then. There right now, you can just jumble them all up. You can jumble them all up. But that would be huge for them. And Seattle is in a bad spot. They certainly are. You made an interesting point there as well, which is kind of what they did at 18. Where it was like, oh, the safety's going to be there. Derwin's going to be there. Derwin's going to be there. When it's 17. So, oh, Calvin Ridley's there. Calvin Ridley, we took Leighton Vander Esch. Maybe ends up being really good. Sure. You know, and then in round two, they added an offensive lineman. It's like, ah, is that where they needed to go? It strengthens a strength. And you take that for what it is. But Dallas right now does sit there with question marks because, I mean, the receiving core, we've said it once, we'll say it again. It's not great. Not great at all. And the secondary leaves some question marks. But if they add Earl Thomas and Connor Williams pans out for this team at left guard and that running game is what it was in 2016, then Dallas can end up being right there in the hunt for not just the playoffs, but maybe even the division crown if there is some regression for the Philadelphia Eagles. With the way the times worked out, George, we can head over to Philadelphia. Any other points that we should make on Dallas quickly?
I guess the last point about Earl Thomas would be one thing Dallas does have to keep in mind here is salary cap. And Earl Thomas would cost, and they do have to pay Dak Prescott next year, Ezekiel Elliott the year after that, and DeMarcus Lawrence. I mean, so they do have guys they have to pay, and maybe they got to keep that under consideration as well. And maybe that's the reason you're not doing the deal here. Maybe you can't afford him there, and maybe that's why Dallas isn't heavy on him, and maybe that's why Dallas doesn't want to pay a premium pick for him. Mm. You know, if we got to trade for him and sign him, what's the point? And once again, I think this is more of a game of chicken. See which side blinks first. I think you're right. Dallas is waiting out Seattle for when they have no choice but to deal him.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's going to be a situation to watch. He's not playing football unless that contract is worked out, whether it be Dallas, Seattle, or some surprise team. Let's move on over to Philadelphia, the reigning Super Bowl champions and the reigning NFC, 13-3. They had the best record there. And, you know, they went on to win the Super Bowl with Nick Foles, which was a wild thing. Carson Wentz, I would certainly say, was going to win MVP, not for that injury. At the time of the injury, he was the MVP of the league. They lost some coaching, though. Frank Reich goes over to Indianapolis to be the head coach. And then they lost their quarterback coach because that all of that happened kind of quickly. They thought Frank Reich would stay in Philadelphia. The McDaniels back out. Indianapolis had to reopen their head coach search. So DeFilippo, John DeFilippo, was already gone. He's now the offensive coordinator with Minnesota. So they did lose something within that quarterback room, but they still keep Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson, which I think is a combination right now that plenty of people are very, very high on.
My most impressive thing about the Philadelphia Eagles, and the reason I think they're, I don't want to say head and shoulders above the rest of the NFC East, but the reason I think they're the best team in the NFC East, and the reason why I would say they're the only double-digit win team right now in the NFC East, is this. We've talked about this during the show a couple times. Chargers just got screwed, right? They lost Jarrett. They lost Henry. You know, you just brought up the Carolina Panthers. You're losing your right tackle. There'll be other injuries. The Eagles can afford injuries. Mm. Not that they want, of course not. But there's not one injury, not one, that would kill this team. You think about it. Wentz, you got Foles as a backup. Running back? They're loaded. Ajayi, Clement, Sproles, there's not one guy they're going to rely on to do all the work there. Receiver? It's crazy. You got Jeffrey, Aguilar, Wallace, Hollins, who I really like, and a couple other guys there. Tight end, Ertz, and Goedert. Even if you have a great backup tight end, well, we think he's going to be a great backup tight end. You know, your defense has got players there. Hell, the only player on this team I may not want to see get hurt significantly might be Fletcher Cox. I think that might be their biggest loss here. And if you think about that, to be able to have that kind of depth in today's football is almost next to impossible. You don't see this kind of depth. You just don't see it with the salary cap age because your teams generally can't afford it. The Eagles have it all over the place. That's why I'm so high on the Eagles. Listen, the NFL teams are, it's a game of attrition. You're going to have injuries. It's July 28th we're talking about injuries. You know, we'll be talking about it more every week. We'll be talking about injuries that happen. I mentioned it before. It's almost a daily occurrence. All right, maybe not daily, but every other day there's going to be an injury. Just a matter of how significant it is. It's going to affect teams. The Eagles can afford it. You know, where unless they get a whole string of them, they're not going to be decimated. Chargers are already hurt. They lost their starting tight end and starting cornerback. That hurts. Yeah, and the Eagles, like I said, I can't say this enough. They can afford the injury. Obviously, they can't afford four at the same position. That would kill anybody. But they can afford an injury or two. And it's going to happen. It happens to all teams. But the Eagles, in my mind, might be the team best in the NFL at being able to afford or survive such an injury or two.
And what speaks to that point that you just perfectly put there, and what is so preposterous, maybe, is a way to just describe this depth, is they have to be the only team that could lose a talent like Carson Wentz at quarterback to start the year and not be in a panic. Because Nick Foles, and look, you can say what you want with the UFC product of the system. He got lucky. He doesn't matter. That's the reigning Super Bowl MVP who torched Minnesota and then was playing snap for snap with Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. We come back. We're going to break down this roster. A lot of running backs to talk about there. Wide receiver has some depth and quarterback questions alike. We'll talk about that next year on Fantasy Sports Today.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Fantasy Sports Today, Kevin Walsh, alongside my man George Kurtz, and my man Sean, always hooking it up with music. I absolutely love it. And we got Philadelphia Eagles to discuss. George, let's just quickly with the quarterback situation. Carson Wentz right now, ADP amongst quarterbacks goes fifth. I know that you are not someone that goes quarterback typically that early. If you did, do you find it necessary to make sure you have Nick Foles?
Yeah, I think you have to. Like I said, he's already practicing 11-on-11 drills. And for those who don't know, 11-on-11 drills means you got people around your legs. You got bodies flying everywhere. This is real practice. You know, live bullets and all that other stuff. So, yeah, I have no problem with I have no problem drafting Carson Wentz, but if I'm doing so, I'm grabbing Nick Foles as well. Mm-hmm. You should be able to do so around 14. No one should be sniping him from you. That wouldn't make any sense for somebody else. So I said I'm drafting Wentz as I normally would, but I'm grabbing Foles just in case, even though I fully expect. Mm-hmm. At this point, I'd be shocked, really surprised, if Wentz isn't starting week one. If they were worried about his leg, he wouldn't be cleared for 11-on-11.
In that scenario, And I agree with you on all fronts. If you have Wentz, you pair him with Foles to be careful. When do you drop Foles?
Probably after week one.
Okay.
Assuming there's somebody I want to grab on the waiver wire, which there will be.
But you hold on to him, right? Like you let that first game play out and everything and just make sure we're all systems a go, and then you can let Foles go. Because I that's what I would agree with.
I was assuming waivers wouldn't run before week one. You bring up an interesting point. Waivers could run before week one. If everything works well in preseason and hearing anything negative, and waivers do run before week one, and there's a player out there you want, I might be a little hesitant, but if you really want that player, then I'm probably releasing Foles before week one.
Okay.
You know, after week one, it's an easy choice for me. If, assuming Wentz plays, you know, plays week one, things said against Atlanta, plays great, blah, 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 mm-hmm. no problems, moving around. You know, I'm moving on here. I don't even like to have a second quarterback. More or less that second quarterback to be a backup.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't want to eat that roster spot up. I might feel differently, Kevin, if you're in a league with eight bench spots.
Okay.
If that's true, hey, fine. You can keep Foles for a while. But if most of us only playing four or five slots, in that case, those slots are just too valuable, especially once those bye weeks start coming.
Yeah. I agree. So the running back situation for Philadelphia is interesting. Jay Ajayi, I would make the argument, is the most talented guy there. Corey Clement, people are excited about. Darren Sproles enters his last season. They drafted Danelle Pumphrey. I don't know how much he really will be involved in the action. But one of the things that has remained true, at least within Doug Peterson's time in Philadelphia, is there just hasn't necessarily been a guy who has emerged as the running back. Now, we have a lot of situations just like this throughout all of football, so it's not as if the Eagles are unique in that regard. But I do find a little bit interesting is I'd like to make the argument that Ajayi has that potential. He could be the guy. Right now, 22nd running back off the board in PPR. What's your outlook for Jay Ajayi?
You know, we talked about this with Tony Sincotta last week. And I have to admit, I'm a little worried. And the main reason is this. All right, we saw Ajayi get traded over last year. I did that. He didn't really get a big workload there, which made me think that, okay, maybe the Eagles just took him on because the deal was too good. So you're going to give us Ajayi for a fourth-round pick? Oh, okay. No choice that we'll take him. It's just too good to pass up. And that would make me think that, well, now we have him full offseason. He's fully integrated in our offensive system. Now we can put him in. He'll be really good. You know, we'll use him. Okay, I want to think that. But you already said it. You know, they got Darren Sproles. He's back from the injury. All right, so he's going to be a third down back. And like I said, that doesn't really bother me. You know, a lot of teams have that. We're going Giovanni Bernard, Duke Johnson, Tevin Coleman, blah, 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 blah. A lot of teams do that, so it doesn't really bother me. But now you got Corey Clement, too. You know, that guy had a very good Super Bowl. Good last quarter of the season, right? Really came on last year for Philadelphia. I don't think they're going to forget about him. You know, so now we're talking maybe he could be a three-headed monster here. And he has a good way of keeping everybody healthy, especially at running back. You know, none's a superstar, but we can use them all in different situations here. So that's great NFL-wise, not really good fantasy-wise. You know, so that's my problem. You made the Smallwood and Pumphrey, too. So they have depth of the wazoo here of guys who could play there. So I think Ajayi is the most talented of this bunch at this point in their careers. But I don't think he's going to get the full workload of a first and second down back. I don't think there's a situation where Ajayi is the first and second down back and the touchdown guy and the short yardage guy. Sproles, the third down back, going to catch the ball out of the backfield. I think Clement's going to play a couple series here and there. I think Sproles' role could be a little bit bigger than we think it could be. Bottom line is, I love this offense. Hate the running back situation for fantasy. It's going to drive me insane. Ajayi would have to fall to me at a spot that I like. You know, he's a running back too. And I'm just not going to go. This is one of those teams I mentioned earlier in the show where I said two running backs don't bother me. When we talk about three and four, now I start to get worried here. Unless Ajayi is available in round five.
Yeah.
You know, that's because I can't pass that up. Starting running back, you have to take it. I'm going to be looking, once again, in a different direction here. Has nothing to do with the player. It's just the amount of players they have there at that position.
The next couple of running backs on Fantasy Pros ADPs that come after him, Sony Michel, Ronald Jones, Mark Ingram, Lamar Miller, and Deion Lewis. Jay Ajayi in front of all of those guys, how many, if any, do you take before Jay Ajayi?
All right, well, Sony Michel's the same problem, right? New England, no thank you. I'm staying away there. I mean, Bill Belichick hates fantasy football. He just does. He has way too many running backs to choose from. I'll say this a million times. Bill Belichick doesn't care about personal stats, doesn't care about making his players happy. All he cares about is winning football games. And if week one, oh, it's a Sony Michel game. He matches up great. If week two, it's Rex Burkhead, that's the way he's going to go with it. Michel won't be heard from that week. I can't deal with that. Not forget Ingram. I mean, he's suspended for four games. I think they have a bye in week six. You may not even see him until week seven, really, for your fantasy team. I'm going to pass there. Ronald Jones, I do kind of like Ronald Jones. He's somebody I'm interested in. That it could be the end up being the star of Tampa. but it's already sort of a mess there. Winston suspended, and they're another team. They have some interesting guys there at running back that I don't think will be forgotten about either, as far as Peyton Barber, Jaquez Rogers, Charles Sims. Mm. So that's my problem with Jones. The player you mentioned that I like is Deion Lewis. I like him because he's in that two running back system now with Derrick Henry. And that doesn't bother me. I've said that before. You know, actually, Lewis and Henry is another one I should bring up when I keep saying Duke Johnson and them, because I think Derrick Henry is going to be the first second down guy and the goal line guy. And by the way, when I say that, I don't mean that Deion Lewis is never, ever going to see a first and second down carry. I'm just saying mainly that'll be Derrick Henry's job, and Lewis will catch the ball out of the backfield there. I like that offense. I think that offense is going to be designed on short passing games somewhat. So Deion Lewis is probably somebody I would take over Ajayi out of the players you mentioned.
Yeah, and I think what's funny is, right, Jay Ajayi has the chance to be the guy. I don't think you can make that argument for Deion Lewis unless there was some injury, but you feel more confident in a way in what his role is, and that's probably why you come away feeling that way. They're close for me. I totally, though, understand why you feel that way. The wide receivers in Philadelphia, also interesting. Depth here. Their number one guy is Alshon Jeffrey, 9 touchdowns last season. Healthy for a full 16. That was a concern for some people. The 24th wide receiver off the board right now in PPR. The 3 wide receivers going in front of him: Brandon Cooks, Golden Tate, Jarvis Landry. Alshon comfortably behind those 3 guys, maybe ahead of some of them. How do you feel about 24th? Wide receiver off the board for Alshon Jeffrey?
I think that's probably a little light. I think I'll be going a little higher than that. You mentioned what Tate goes ahead of him. Don't really have a problem with that. Tate, PPR machine there. Doesn't catch many touchdowns, but a PPR machine. So I'll take Tate ahead of him. Cooks on his 3rd team in 3 years. Does this bother anybody? I mean, really, does this bother anybody that he keeps moving around here? Also goes to a team. And this is a reason that I'm not all that high on Jared Goff. They're going to win games with Gurley in their defense. They don't need to throw the ball. They don't need to take too many chances there. So I don't know how great season Cooks is going to have there. So I'm going to pass on him. I think he'll take Jeffrey there. What was the 3rd choice there?
And Jarvis Landry.
Jarvis Landry, not going to be the PPR machine he was with Miami. I don't see him catching 95 to 100 balls. I don't think that's going to happen in this offense, not with Tyrod Taylor. That's tough. I think Landry's the safer choice there because he's still going to catch his fair share of balls, probably in the 75-80 range there. Jeffrey will catch more touchdowns. I think it depends on what you want. If you want upside there with Jeffrey, with touchdowns, wouldn't shock me if he catches 10 to 12. I really wouldn't. He's another player who got better as the season went along last year, maybe because of the injury you mentioned. I'm gonna go Jeffrey there. I just feel a little better about Jeffrey. I've never been really a Jarvis Landry believer. I think that's part of the problem. And part of the problem for me also was he was never a touchdown guy. Last year that changed somewhat, but now he's on a different team. So Lord knows if that matters here. I like Jeffrey.
One of the interesting names, the new name that they have brought in, is Michael Wallace, who on paper I guess you would project him to replace Torrey Smith. Torrey Smith last year had 36 catches on 69 targets, 430 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Torrey Smith is now at the Carolina Panthers. So Mike Wallace comes into that role for this football team. He's currently PPR, the 95th wide receiver off the board. And it makes me wonder if maybe Mike Wallace could end up being a supreme steal for fantasy football players and end up being really valuable for the Philadelphia Eagles. What do you think about Mike Wallace?
I keep wondering why people are just ignoring him.
Yeah,
you mentioned it, 95th receiver. And Scott Fishbowl, by the way, there's like, 22 rounds. I think I got him around 20. I mean, think about that. He was there. I'm like, really? This guy's not so bad. He had 52 catches and 748 yards last year for Joe Flacco and company.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, what's he going to do with in a real offense here?
Yeah.
So I'm on board here. That's the bottom line, Kev. I'm on board. I'll take him last round in every league I'm in. I'll take my chance with Mike Wallace. He's going to have a decent season. Or at least, like I said, for last round. What's his worst case scenario? Oh, he's the bye week filler. Okay. I'll take that. We all need that. And I think there's some upside there. I'm not going to say 1,000 yards, but, I mean, I'll take what he did. And from where you're getting him, I'll take last year's numbers. I would hope a few more touchdowns. I think it's possible because I think what you said is right. He really is a Torrey Smith filler there, and he's going to be that guy once again, run the deep patterns, pull the safety away. I think that's what his job is, but I think they'll get him the ball. Some do. So I like Wallace a lot. I'm surprised he's being ignored.
And I think, you mentioned Wallace comes over to a better system, and Wallace is an upgrade over Torrey Smith. And there were a couple of times last year where Torrey Smith and Wentz were just off on some of those deep throws that could have been big play touchdowns. So if they end up finding that connection, Wentz and Wallace, then you certainly could see those touchdown numbers go up for a Mike Wallace. And you might, we're talking crazy good value. Just for some perspective, Nelson Aguilar, who was really, really good last season for this team, finally kind of had a good year, caught 8 touchdowns, 62 catches with 768 yards. Where you're getting Aguilar is in the 40s. We're talking about wide receiver, let me pull it up right here, 44 off the board. Double, more than double, where you find Mike Wallace. So is that a realistic perception of the gap between Aguilar and Mike Wallace? I would lean towards no.
I agree. Like I said, I'm on board with Mike Wallace. I was annoyed because I have Matt Collins in a deep dynasty league, and I really wanted to see what he could do. I think Wallace has hurt him. Wallace is not bad. You know, like I said, Baltimore, we all know, really a bad passing offense the past couple of years. And Wallace is not an NFL number wide receiver one. That's not what he is. He's a deep threat. So he needs complementary players. Philadelphia has that in spades. Now you got Jeffrey lining up on the other side of him. You got Ertz controlling the middle here. He's not going to see that much double coverage there. Even the safety over the top will be tough unless they're playing cover two. So I like Wallace. For where you're getting him, I think he's a gift. And so you can take him whatever round you want. See, you're playing a 16-round jet, take him round 14. You know, and you're not giving up anything. Even if we're wrong. All right, he sucks. Mm-hmm. All right. Also, the player you're taking round 14 is going to be terrible anyway. He's the first guy you're releasing to go grab the hot guy off the waiver wire. But I'm banking on Wallace. I think he's going. I don't know if he's going to be the player that's going to win you fantasy leagues, but I think he's going to be return more than the value of where you're drafting him.
The tight end position gives you Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert. I think Goddard is interesting because we saw Trey Burton have some value last year when Zach Ertz was out for 2 weeks. Last year, Zach Ertz was awesome. 74 catches, 824 yards, 8 touchdowns. It felt like every year he was on the cusp. And last year was that big breakout season. Currently, third tight end off the board. Does that feel right for you?
Yeah, I mean, you want to make an argument that he should be second tight end? I have no problem with that. You can make the argument that Kelsey, Patrick Mahomes never really played with them. One game. You think Kelsey's still going to be great? I do. But so Ertz second, Ertz third, I don't have a problem with it either way. I think Ertz is one of the best tight ends in the game. I think he's probably only going to get better as far as tight end. As I said, I love this offense. You know, there's no weakness there. There's no thing you can truly key on. It's not like you can say, we'll just take Ertz out of the game if you're a defense. You still got to worry about Jeffrey and the running game solid. There's no one player here that's going to make this offense go. I'm not saying it's the Green Bay Packers where they're going to score 40 points a game, but it's a damn good offense here. And so Ertz, he's a player I've liked since he first came out. You mentioned Trey Burton there and how good he was. Listen, as a Cowboy fan, I wonder if the Cowboys, if they would have known that Witten was retiring, they didn't at the start of free agency. I wonder if they would have made a stronger play for Trey Burton. That's how good a player I think he is. And I love what he might be able to do in Chicago. But as far as Philadelphia is concerned, and Dallas Goedert, I don't have much interest in. Maybe in a dynasty league, but certainly not a redraft. They even have Richard Rodgers as a third string tight end, and he's not bad. You know, so, like I said, once again, this team is loaded. I mean, they're just loaded for bear here. Good for the Eagles. Zach Ertz, I mean, I'd like to have him on my team, but probably he's going around 5, and I don't like to take my tight ends that early, around 4, around 5. I get it. I truly do get it, because tight end falls off real quick. It's only about really 7, 8 tight ends you want on your team, and you really do want to make sure you get one of them. But that's my only thing there. I'm not going to have him on too many teams, because I'm not going to spend that kind of draft capital on a tight end.
And Dallas Goedert is someone just to keep an eye on if you're in a super deep league. But also, if Zach Ertz missed two games last year. Those two games, Trey Burton against Denver, two catches, 41 yards, and a touchdown. And against the Rams, five catches, 71 yards, two touchdowns in the two games where he was the number one wide receiver. It speaks to Trey Burton, but it speaks to the opportunity that can also be there. Five total touchdowns for the number two tight end last year with the Eagles, so Goddard could provide value. We come back. We're wrapping up this NFC East preview here on Fantasy Sports Today. Keep it locked.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Here, wrapping up an NFC East preview on Fantasy Sports Today. Kevin Walsh alongside George Kurtz. Quickly before we do that, I just want to tell you about mybookie.ag, because if you enjoy playing daily fantasy sports but are sick of dealing with the professionals using algorithms to select hundreds of lineups and entries, try the props builder tool at mybookie.ag. Forget having to create multiple lineups, ditch the hassle of dealing with late scratches, and avoid experts winning 90% of the money. Invest in the players that you want without salary caps. And if you sign up for a new account using the promo code FNTSY, you can elect an option to receive a 50% deposit bonus with a rollover requirement. No more dealing with the late lineup scratches. No experts to compete against, just you and the prop that you choose. You're completely in charge. So go to mybookie.ag, enter promo code FNTSY upon sign up, and choose your matchups using the props builder tool. That is mybookie.ag, promo code FNTSY. George, I wanted to mention the line play for the Philadelphia Eagles, because I don't know how you could make an argument that any team would have a better combination of offensive line and defensive line play. Both are conservatively ranked within the top three in terms of offensive line and defensive line. I think that I would make the argument they've got the best offensive line and defensive line in football. I understand perhaps maybe some concerns with Jason Peters coming off that injury. I think that that's totally fair, but they still boast three all-pro level talents, and Steven Wisniewski comes back. And even last year, they had some good performance out of Vitae, who stepped in or Jason Peters in the playoffs, so you have to feel good about that. And then the defensive line, it's just loaded. Derek Barnett, Timmy Jernigan, Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham is your front four. Then they add Michael Bennett. They've still got Chris Long. Josh Sweat could have been a steal for this football team in the draft. So that is one of the things for the Philadelphia Eagles that has me secure in their position within the league, that they should be one of the better teams again, is because on both sides of the ball, their line play is just top-notch.
It is. I stated early in the show. I mean, yes, we all love the quarterbacks, the wide receivers, the running backs, skill positions, but football games, more often than not, are determined with the offensive line and with defensive line. And the Eagles are loaded at both. People forget this, that the Eagles' offensive line is not that far behind Dallas's, if at all. You know, they don't get as much pub as the Cowboys' offensive line do, because it's Dallas, and everybody talks about them. But people forget, the Eagles' offensive line is damn good itself. And you combine that with the defensive line, I would 100% agree with you. If you want to combine both, they're probably number one in the NFL. I'm not so sure it's all that close with another team. I mean, think of the players they have. I mean, Fletcher Cox. I think he might be the one player they can at least afford to lose to injury. Mm-hmm. Because, they're deep everywhere, but nobody's really deep at defensive tackle. I think that would hurt. Not that he would ever get hurt. He's my best IDP player on one of my dynasty teams, so I don't want to see him get hurt. But they're loaded here. They've done a magnificent job of not only managing the cap, but of spreading the depth around to all positions. You picked up Michael Bennett. You know, you really don't need him to be an every down player, rush the passer. You know, situational. That's what they'll bring him in there for. You know, it's just, I love what they've done here. The weakest part of the defense is the secondary. You know, mainly the outside corners. That's where you can attack this team. But, you know, when you only have one weakness, and Philly, when I look at Philadelphia, that's what I see, one weakness. Well, you can cover for that. You know, there are ways to cover for that, and they'll figure it out. But that's the only weakness on the team that I see are the outside corners.
And the big question for them in that position is Sidney Jones, who they drafted in the second round of that 2017 draft, missed his entire rookie season. They knew that coming into the pick. Obviously, it did not hurt them. The result ended up being just fine, but they now get him back. And I think that they're going to look to him, if all pans out, maybe to be their number one corner. He started off in the slot, I saw, in training camp. So questions if that is going to be the case. But I definitely think that Sidney Jones is someone they would love to see be their main guy. So, George, as we kind of wrap this up, you know, with all of these teams, as of today, we've made this point a number of times, make it once more, things are going to change. But as of today, you don't have to get into record, but just how would you rank these four football teams?
All right, as of today, I have Philadelphia number one. That really hasn't changed. I think they're the only team in this division that gets a double-digit wins. You know, if you would ask me, I'd probably put their over-under, excuse me, let's say 10.5. You know, so I think they're the best team there. Number two, as of today, Beaver Giants. I think they are, I think last year was a mirage. That 3-13 year, I think, that snowballed once things went downhill. You pointed out, let's suspend all our cornerbacks. Not that they didn't deserve it, mind you, but it was just strange how the whole year went on. Let's bench Eli and ruin that streak, and then let's put him back in the next. It was just a joke. You know, I had really no problem benching Eli last year, but you can't bench for Geno Smith.
Yeah.
That was silly. It was a dumpster fire for the Giants last year. Bottom line is that they weren't a 3-13 team last year. You know, just things happened. I think they're a better team here. I'll go with Dallas number three. If they had a passing game here, I'd be much more excited about this team. If they trade for Earl Thomas in a couple of weeks, you and I can revisit this. Then I think I'd have Dallas at number two. I'll go Washington number four. Yeah, listen, I'm not saying Washington's the last place team. Truly, I believe Dallas, Washington, Giants, they're all 7 or 8 win teams. You know, I would probably put their over-unders all at 7.5. Let them all figure it out. They're all going to beat up on each other. The schedule is tough for each team. You know, so I think they're all going to have some issues. I think it wouldn't shock me if they all went 8-8. You know, and then Philadelphia went to 10-6. It's that kind of division. They're not bad, but they're not great either. They all have warts.
I feel very similar. I think that the Eagles are the best team in this division, and I think that there is a decent gap between them and that next group. And part of that is, an assurance. I do think that those other three teams could end up getting to that level. I think they could. They have potential there, but there just feels like too many question marks. And I think I would as well, as of today, I'd likely place Washington at four. And I'm not going to lie, part of that comes from just this conversation that we've had today. I worry a little bit about maybe Alex Smith leaving Kansas City. I don't know how great he will be. I don't know how sure of that, especially natural regression coming off of his best season of his career could be multiplied by then leaving that system, which probably put him in the best case. And then again, you mentioned it as well, just the natural change of learning everything could also be a bit difficult. I like Darius Geis, but I think today Washington would be fourth. I am flip-flopping a lot with the Giants and the Cowboys. I trust Ezekiel Elliott. I think he could be fantastic, but I could not be any more underwhelmed by those outside options for the Dallas Cowboys, the receivers, the tight ends. And I like what they have within that front seven. I still fear the fact that a lot of their success defensively always seems to be whether Sean Lee is on the field or not on the field, and trusting him for 16 games feels like a fool's errand. And then on the Giants side of things, there's just a lot of talent on that offense. What pushes the Giants as the second team for me, and then Dallas at three, so we actually kind of at the moment, we do have it spot for spot locked up there. What pushes it ahead is I like what I saw from Pat Shurmur last year, and I think that getting rid of Ben McAdoo was going to be a big boost for this team. The fact that they added a guy that I like in Pat Shurmur is why I currently would have the Giants at 2.
Yeah, listen, if you're going on coaching, I don't trust Jason Garrett as far as I can bowl him. surprised Dallas kept him on. I think they've missed the playoffs 5 of his 7 seasons. You know, Garrett has gotten better as a coach in Dallas. I think he's gotten more, for lack of a better term, ballsy, where he takes more chances now. Back in his first couple of years, I mean, he just followed the coaching playbook. Up, fourth down, punting. You know, it doesn't matter. Punt. Never went for it. Now he has more guts now where he goes for it. I think the Cowboys need to do that. But I don't trust his in-play calling. I don't really trust the coordinators all that much either. So if you're going strictly by coaching, sure, I'll take that. But like I said, I think this is all close. I think Philadelphia. I think the Eagles, like I said, they're head and shoulders above the rest of the division. I'm not, when I talk about the NFC East, I'm not really talking about Philadelphia. I think they're one of the best teams in the NFC, which I can't say for any of these other three teams. You know, I'll say it again. I mean, when you look at the NFC, real quick, Philadelphia, Green Bay, Minnesota, Atlanta, New Orleans, Rams. Which one of these teams, the Redskins, Cowboys, or Giants, is knocking off one of those teams? Really, which one is doing it? I can't see it. Not right now. Obviously, injuries will play a part of the season, go rolls along here, but right now, I mean, these three teams are competitive, but to knock off one of those teams, I just don't see it.
I agree. I think it's really going to be difficult. I mean, you can make an argument for the NFC South. I mean, they put three teams in last year. And you can make that argument that they might be able to do the same. Carolina, we just mentioned the Darrell Williams injury. Maybe that offensive line could be in shambles, especially after losing Andrew Norwell. But that's still a pretty good football team that's going to get Greg Olsen back. And they made some additions to the offense as well that they should be better. They had three teams in the playoffs last year. I really like the Detroit Lions. And if Matt Patricia is a success, boom, right then you might make an argument the NFC North. Maybe they have three teams in the playoffs. Because Green Bay and Minnesota, as you mentioned, I mean, Green Bay gets Aaron Rodgers back. And that's a fool's errand right there if you're going to count out Aaron Rodgers. And Minnesota, the offensive line is a little bit concerning to me. And they lost Pat Shurmur, but I liked that they replaced him with John DeFilippo. And they're going to get Dalvin Cook back. And Kirk Cousins should, at the minimum, be able to give you what Case Keenum gave you last year. So Minnesota should be pretty darn good. You go to the NFC West. The Rams are a legitimate Super Bowl contender, no two ways about it. That's a loaded roster. And listen, I think Arizona's a little bit underrated. I think that the Seahawks, everywhere but quarterback, have a really poor roster. Russell Wilson's a top five quarterback in this league. And that gives them a chance any given Sunday. Sounds cliche, but it's true. You got a top five quarterback, you got a chance. And everybody's excited about San Francisco because Jimmy Garoppolo and Kyle Shanahan. So how many teams? I just went through the other three divisions that I not even bother to mention. Chicago and Tampa Bay. And Tampa Bay, that's because they're without their quarterback for the first 3 weeks. I think that's going to absolutely kill them. And I think that Chicago is going to be a big adjustment. I think there's too many moving pieces there for them to click right away. It's still a decent football team. Now, I'm not saying that the Giants, the Cowboys, and the Redskins are all a tier below every team I mentioned there. Not at all. But that's a lot of teams vying for a playoff spot, especially if they end up being that considerable gap away from the Eagles. That's two playoff spots, two wild card spots up for grabs. And if you lock in one of Green Bay or Minnesota into one, they got to be better than, you know, whether it be Atlanta, New Orleans, or Carolina, because one of them will win the division. Then, of course, another one's going to be looking for that playoff spot in the wild card. It is an incredibly difficult conference this year. And if one of these teams pops, it's going to be great. That still isn't going to be a guarantee to get you in the playoffs. This looks like this is going to be a year where a double-digit win team misses the playoffs. And that's unfortunate, but that looks like it very well could be the case.
Oh, agreed. But, you know, we forget back in the day, you know, that happened quite often. 12 wins would win your division. 11 wins would get you the wild card. 10-win teams did miss playoffs. The NFC is loaded. The NFC is loaded. When you think about the NFC, name me a bad team. I mean, who's the worst team? You said Seattle earlier. Yeah, they might be. And they're not a terrible team, but they might be the worst team. Arizona would have to be considered in here as well. Other than that, every other team is good, improving. Even the Bears. I love what the Bears have done this offseason. Tampa Bay may have some issues. I wonder if Tampa Bay falls apart if they go 0-3 without Jameis Winston there. And their first three games are also tough. So I wonder if they fall apart here. But this conference is loaded. You know, people keep saying it. You know, if New England were in the NFC, they wouldn't be going to the Super Bowl this year. And that's probably true. So I think there are about four or five teams better than the Patriots this year. NFC is a tough conference this year. The NFC East is a tough division this year. Outside of the Eagles, the other teams are going to beat up on each other. Like I said, it wouldn't shock me if, you know, with Giants, Redskins, Cowboys, they all go 3-3 in the division. You know, because they're all just cannibalizing each other, which is why you may only see one team come out of the East.
Yeah. Again, think about that. Like Seattle could be in the running for the worst team in this conference. They've got a top five quarterback. It does speak to how bad that roster is. But if Seattle is in any of these AFC divisions, there are people that will pick them to win that division based off Russell Wilson, and you can make that argument enough in an AFC division. You cannot make that argument right now with the way the NFC is slotted. You simply cannot. Before we go, I do want to mention one big piece of news that somewhat ties in to the NFC East, because we've mentioned his name a couple of times. Dez Bryant stays in the news. And maybe we're getting a little bit closer to Dez Bryant finding a landing spot with the Cleveland Browns. Your reaction to this potential landing spot for Dez?
Well, it makes some sense, right? Because we don't know what's going on with Josh Gordon now, right? This came out early in the week where he's going to be away from the team. A lot of conspiracy theories there. Apparently, he didn't fail anything. But then why, you know, it's strange. What's going on there is strange. So Dez Bryant could make some sense there. But you're a young, rebuilding team, right? You're starting pretty much starting from the ground on up. Dallas already told you the reason they got rid of him, which is not a secret anymore, is because they didn't like what he was doing with Dak. So do you want Dez now doing this with Baker Mayfield? I mean, is this really what you want to do here? You know, so I wonder if this goes away now. Plus, if I'm Cleveland, I can't be all that happy, right or wrong, that Dez fired back on Twitter last night.
Yeah.
And, you know, called Sean Lee and a snake, and he did all this other stuff here. I mean, because you like to think, hey, what happens in the locker room stays in the locker room, right? I mean, that's why it's personal conversations here. You don't want the stuff getting out, and now Dez let it get out. So that's why if I'm Dez's agent here, I'm like, what are you doing? Be quiet. You know, we have a meeting with Cleveland. I think it's Monday. You know, why would you put this stuff out now? That could be enough for them to say, you know what? The stuff we hear about Dez is true. Yeah, now we're not going to go in that direction. We'll wait. You'll see what happens with Josh Gordon. We have it covered anyway. Corey Coleman's not that bad. You know, so I think Dez picked an interesting time to all of a sudden decide to, you know, freak out on Twitter and start, you know, blaming Stephen Jones, and it's his fault, and not that he's wrong about it. Like I said, he wasn't all wrong about what he said, but I think he had to have self-control here. Bad timing in my mind. Like I said, his agent cannot be happy about this.
I think, again, George, that's perfectly said. Right or wrong, at this point in time, likely not the move to make, especially Cleveland, who's trying to sell a culture change right now to bring in a guy that, I mean, is clearly just having some locker room beef. I don't know how great that is. That wraps up the NFC East preview for today's show. Tomorrow, same time, we're doing the NFC South. It'll be me and George Kurtz again. Thank you to Sean Engel downstairs. A terrific job. For George Kurtz, I'm Kevin Walsh. We'll see you guys tomorrow.